Welcome back to the Fantasy Hockey Podcast. The trade deadline was today and a lot went down. And because of
that,
we didn't do a Monday episode, as you might have noticed. Maybe, who knows, for all the, you know, two people that listen to us, right? which is probably ourselves when we're re-listening to our episodes. But no, we didn't do the episode Monday because we wanted to run through everything that happened. So what we're going to do is we're going to do a rundown of every single team and just look at how whatever moves they did impacted them, both on the receiving end and the losing end. So, like, for example, Stastny was lost on the Blues. How does that affect the Blues? Not just Winnipeg, but also how does it affect the Blues and their loss? So that's kind of how we're going to run through this. We're going to run through every team. And that, as always, means that we start in Anaheim with the Ducks. So to start there, we're going to talk about Jason Chimera, who the Ducks received, and they gave up Chris Wagner in that. Now, I should mention before we go over this that we're only going to talk about NHL-relevant players, so we're not going to make, like, speculative things on, like, oh, yeah, the pick is worth it or anything like that. No, just talking
no
about...
No picks, no, like, AHL players. Anything, only things that could potentially, even in the longest, like, stretch, have some sort of fantasy relevance.
Yeah, fantasy in the short term. Yeah, exactly. So how about you start first? Because obviously, like, you know, Chimera was on the Isles, and that's your guy. Yep. So you start first and let us know kind of what you think about this.
So Anaheim acquires Chimera. I honestly don't really see why either of this happened. If I were to grade the trade, I think the Islanders won, but I think it's kind of like, from fantasy perspective, it's a wash. Chimera has high-end speed, but he takes a few strides to get there. And he's definitely showing his age.
Yeah.
I don't really know why Anaheim wanted him. I mean, he can kill penalties, but so Wagner could as well. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's just speed.
It doesn't matter. I can tell you that much for fantasy perspective. And then losing Wagner also doesn't matter. He did have a little stretch of being decent when they put him up on the second line with Silverberg and whoever else. Or maybe he might have been with Getzlaff for a little bit there. I can't remember. He got moved up for a while, and he did pretty well considering he hits. So he was like a bangers league option. But since then, doesn't really matter anymore.
I almost feel like it's the Isles saying, let's get younger and get rid of one of our oldest players on the roster.
I mean, they were healthy scratching him for a while, too. So
yeah, exactly. So, there's no fantasy relevance to this. I only see it as like a good penalty kill guy who's faster than Wagner. A little bit more reliable, I'd say, as well. You know what you're going to get. But aside from that, like you said, no fantasy relevance. So moving on to Arizona, terrible team in the West. Everyone knows about them, even though no one really sees them. They receive Darcy Kemper from the Kings, and they lose Tobias Reeder and Scott Wedgewood. Now, Wedgewood's a funny one, just before we even get into this, that they told Wedgewood when they traded for him from the Devils, remember that they said, hey, you're going to be our guy, like our backup here. We want you to get a house in Arizona and like get comfortable. And then they trade him away. What the hell?
For Kemper, too.
Straight lied to his face. God, that's messed up. But for me, I really, really love the Tobias Reeder pickup for the Kings. So nothing important from a fantasy perspective, I think, on the Arizona side. They didn't really... they didn't get, I think, more or less relevant. Maybe this leads to more stuff for Keller, but I don't really see it. I don't see anything. And Ranta may not be resigned, so Kemper is interesting, and he may get more starts. And Arizona's been hot as of late, but I still don't think that makes Kemper any sort of relevant in terms of, like, picking him up right now.
Yeah, the only way I see Kemper being relevant is if... Ranta gets hurt again. Even then, you really got to be stretching if you want to take the goalie of the worst team in the league. So,
I still don't want to touch Arizona. So that's mostly why. It's like
I think them losing Reeder and Wedgewood doesn't really matter.
No.
As far as fantasy.
No, especially Wedgewood.
Let's move on to Boston. I'll let you start because this has more.
I was excited
to say this is more involved with your team. Yeah,
I know. So Boston receives Tommy Wingles, Rick Nash, and Nick Holden. Nick Holden and Rick Nash come from the Rangers, obviously, and Tommy Wingles coming from San Jose. Am I right? Is that where Tommy Wingles was?
He was in San Jose, but I think he was not there. I actually don't remember who lost Wingles.
I don't remember where he came from, but they acquired Tommy.
Oh, wait, Chicago.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, so, and then they lose Ryan Spooner, Matt Beleski, and Frank Vatrano. Matt Beleski, he's on here, but let's be real. The guy's pretty much like a wash. He was down in the AHL for a long time for the Bruins, so that doesn't matter to them too much. Losing Spooner is big, honestly, in my opinion. He was playing really, really well. Had more points than Nash on significantly less games played. But you can't ignore the fact of what Rick Nash is. He's a guy who can be used in every single situation. He can be used on the penalty kill, on the power play. He's a good second line guy. Like, I think that Rick Nash is
shoots a lot more. Yeah, way more offensive.
I think he is as far as like perfect fit for Boston.
Yep.
Like, just I couldn't have pictured a better place for him in terms of play style. He just reminds me of a more skilled David Backes, and David Backes has been killing it for the Bruins. So I think he's going to get really, really hot, especially because most likely he's going to be on that top power play. He may be somewhat of a must add from this trade deadline, but I also think that you can sleep on him a little bit, and no one's going to rush right now to pick him up off the waiver. So he's probably going to be on the wire for a little bit, but if he does get hot, he's not going to last long. So if you're thinking of grabbing him and giving a little bit of space until he does get hot, just be ready to know exactly who you're going to drop when he does get hot, because he's not going to last long. And yep. Like I said, the loss of Spooner isn't great, but look, Nash is significantly better.
Yep. So Nash already had his first game, posted 5 shots, got 3 minutes of power play time, no points, but all that is good news. If you got 3 minutes of power play time, that means they're putting him on the top unit. He's taking Spooner's spot, unsurprisingly, on that top unit, which is a big deal for him. That said, talking about Wingles briefly, he's just a depth forward. I don't think he's going to have any fantasy impact. They may even scratch him. We both agree on Nash. His value is going to go up almost certainly. He was just dropped in our league, and I'm not really rushing to pick him up. For context, we're a 12-man league. Pretty standard bangers league, no plus minus, but pretty standard roster size on Yahoo. So that'll give you an idea of how far down the depth chart he is. That said, the reason I'm going to pick him up is because my team's stacked, frankly. If I had a more mediocre team, he definitely has a place on somebody's playoff roster, basically. In pretty much any league, unless you're like an 8-man.
Yep.
Holden, I don't think he has any fantasy relevance. He has those flashes where he goes on an offensive streak, but you're talking about a team that has Krug, McAvoy, and Chara on it. And Chara, obviously, he's a few years past being fantasy relevant at this point, but he's still better than Holden as far as offensive defensemen go. I think Spooner's loss is very much offset by Nash coming in. He meshes more with the Bruins system. I think you already kind of got most of that. Bleski and Vetrano leaving don't matter. That's the end of it. Boston. I'll jump us into Buffalo. I'll take the lead on this one. Buffalo had all they did was lose Evander Kane. And they really, I mean, I'm not going to go too much into like what they got back, but they got a conditional second and a fourth or something. And that's if like Kane resigns.
Yeah, if he resigns, it's the first.
Yeah, so that's a small return when you see guys like Tatar going for a first, second, third, which we'll get to that later. I think this Kane leaving, he hasn't been very good on Buffalo for a while, but they also weren't playing him with Eichel for long stretches for whatever reason. Eichel's best production was coming when Kane was also hot and they were just destroying for a while there. So in that regard, I think there's a slight hit to Eichel's overall value. I think Kane is a significantly better left wing than O'Regan is, despite them, you know, having that same collegiate line. You actually tipped me off on this, so yeah. I'll give credit where it's due. But Evan Rodriguez and I don't know O'Regan's first name, honestly, are the top line, I guess, now in Buffalo. Yeah. That's the BU collegiate line. So they're basically just saying having fun with the rest of the season. You know, maybe something will click here and they'll get added value out of a couple guys that probably wouldn't crack many rosters in the NHL.
Yep, exactly. I mean, in my opinion, nothing really changes in Buffalo from this trade. Evander Kane had been playing on the third line a lot in the second power play. It was clear that what they were doing was moving other people up, seeing what their chemistry was like, and just giving them time to mesh because the loss of Evander Kane was inevitable. So I think that in this situation, Buffalo doesn't really lose much. I think pretty much what you've seen in Buffalo recently is what you get. So no one really gets any added value from this. And I think I agree with you. The return definitely wasn't as impressive as you would have expected.
I have a feeling they waited too long. They must have gotten a better offer than that at some point.
Yeah, I think what sucks too is just the options that became available were significantly better than Kane. I think Nash was better than Kane. And I think Maroon maybe is somewhat equal to Kane for somebody who needs him.
I would take Kane over Maroon. The only problem with Kane is his injury history and his toxicity in the locker room. That's going to be the big problem.
I see it more as like price, right? Like for the guys that would have liked Kane, like maybe if he was one of the only options available, then sure. Yeah, I'm happy to pay it. Like the Devils would have been in on it. But there were so many depth guys available that... I just don't. Most teams probably just didn't want to pay. I'm surprised too. I didn't expect that to happen.
Like Dallas?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It seems like somebody
should have made a bigger move for that, but yep, he got traded, so
yeah, he's gone. Okay, yep. So move us into Calgary, which really doesn't have much impact.
Nick Shore. We're talking about a guy that was like a minor piece in a trade earlier between LA and Ottawa involving Dion Phaneuf, which we'll get into later. And then was traded to Calgary for a seventh round pick. A seventh round pick type player doesn't have fantasy relevance. Nope. Moving on.
Yep. Just a depth Carolina. Acquisition.
Yeah, I'll just sweep right through Carolina as well. They received Greg McKegg and lost Josh Joris to the Pens. Nothing fantasy relevant at all. Joris is a sixth or seventh defenseman, and McKegg is nothing. I don't know. He might even get scratched.
Probably scratched. Maybe probably sent will down. Be. Who knows? Yeah.
Something How he takes like him to Chicago, where something actually happened.
Yeah, Chicago actually was busy. They lost Tommy Wingles and lost Ryan Hartman. Tommy Wingles, as we've said before, is pretty much irrelevant fantasy-wise. But Ryan Hartman is significant. I think I'm very shocked, and I think many Chicago fans here will agree with me that this is surprising that you sell a 23-year-old at the deadline. I would not have expected that from Chicago. I didn't expect them to be sellers. They must just not have been very high on Ryan Hartman, although he was also kind of a losing.
They gave him a first, though.
Yeah.
I assume what happened was they were on a call for something else, and then they were like, hey, Hartman for a first, and they kind of went, all right. Yeah, and that was like kind of it.
Apparently they got calls about him, and that everyone said that the asking price was too high. That was the initial report, was that some people had asked the asking price was way too high. And then out of nowhere it said the Preds showed a lot of interest, and so now he ends up in Nashville, which I think is a good fit for him. I like his style, and I think he fits the semi-grittiness, semi-skilled. Like he reminds me a little bit of like an Auberg, Fiala, or no, more like, I guess, Craig Smith or like Auberg style, right? And they got rid of Auberg, so... which we'll talk about, but I think this is a really good fit for Ryan Hartman, which we'll get into. We're getting off track here, but my point on all of this eventually was going to be that I think that this tells us what we need to know about Chicago. They're not making the playoffs. They're most likely not getting Corey Crawford back. So they said, let's get a pick.
Why would you?
It's a
Why
very deep him? Draft.
Makes no sense.
Yep. Let's get a pick.
They're actually better off keeping him on IR, losing more games, and getting a better draft pick.
Exactly. That's what I think, too. And I think that leads me to say that really the only guy I trust right now in Chicago has got to be Patrick Kane. I don't think I trust anybody else as a consistent point producer. Even then, I'm even a little scared to have Kane.
Yep. Moving to Colorado, nothing happened. They traded some AHL guys, but we can go ahead and skip that one.
Yep.
The Blue Jackets had some of the more interesting trades, acquiring Thomas Vanek, Ian Cole, and Mark Letestu. They also lost Jussi Jokinen, but they had been scratching him and playing him like 7 minutes when he was in, so that sort of doesn't matter. So Vanek has upside. There's no doubt about that. It seems like when he clicks, he'll go on point-per-game pace for extended periods of time, which could be for the rest of the fantasy playoffs easily.
Yeah.
I'm not saying rush to pick up Vanek. In fact, I probably would not, but pay attention. If he gets a top power play, he's almost certainly going to get top six time. So that's already top six time in Columbus is better than top six time in Vancouver.
Yep.
So, and if he gets top power play, despite Blue Jackets power play not being very good, they have been better lately. And he can help the power play. So, pay attention to his production. His deployment, his time on ice is going to be a big indicator of whether or not he's going to be fantasy relevant, even if he is hot or cold to start with. And his peripherals. If he's not shooting, Vanek's a goal scorer, so if he's not shooting, I would be low on him.
I'd be worried.
Ian Cole, great defensive add. He's not going to be fantasy relevant, probably. He had those little stretches in Pittsburgh where everybody was dead, but Pittsburgh has so much offense that really they just need any warm body to throw a puck to somebody to get points. So he just kind of fell into that by being on top power play. Same thing with Letestu. He was tried on the top power play pretty often in Edmonton for some reason. I don't think they're going to do that in Columbus, so I doubt he's worth it. And as I mentioned, Jokinen, it doesn't matter.
And then for me, I think I got to mention on Vanek and Cole. I think they're great adds. I think they fit exactly what Torts wants to do. Get a little fast with Vanek and a little bit of grit. And Ian
I think
Cole
Vanek and Torts have some history too, if I remember right. I think there's some bad blood there, but I don't remember the deal.
I think so. But he does fit his system well. Like they have bad blood, but hey, he fits the system well in what they're doing in Columbus right now. And I'm really intrigued on both of them. They add depth. They make the second power play more interesting. And surprisingly, today, actually, the first power play has two power play goals against Washington as we record this. So there you go. They're getting a little better as we go.
Did Vanek get any of them?
Vanek did not get in on any of them. I don't think he's playing today.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think he made it over yet in time. I think Ian Cole
it's a long flight.
Will not be grabbable. Is that a word? I think that's a word. And that's also a weird thing to say about a player. He's not grabbable. Yep. No. On the other hand, he is very grabbable. That's a weird sentence. It's a very, very weird sentence. I feel weird saying that. Anyways, I don't think he's worth grabbing right now because you just don't know what his deployment is, and he's fighting Werenski and Seth Jones for deployment. He's probably maybe going to slot in on that second or third pairing.
He's definitely not getting first pairing. It's going to be second
definitely
or third.
Not getting
probably
first
third.
Pairing. Not going to fit in on the power play. Not really worth it. Now, Vanek, on the other hand, like you said, very worth it. We know Torch shuffles lines, which means that a lot of guys get looks every once in a while, and Vanek is a guy who goes on streaks. So if he gets a streak, why not? So he's just one of those guys to keep an eye on. He's kind of like a Charlie Coyle type guy, where once he gets going, he gets going. And that could very easily happen in Columbus. So moving on to Dallas, they did nothing.
Disappointing and strange, if you ask me. I've been saying all season that they lack forward depth pretty badly. Spezza is probably their third best or fourth best forward. That seems bad.
They needed forward depth. But at the same time, I don't mind the move. Only because the entire Central, pretty much, aside from Chicago, is in arms race right now. Everyone is buying. Winnipeg's buying. Nashville's buying. The Golden Knights are buying. Like, they're not in the Central, but you get my point. The West is very, very tough this year. I'm okay with Dallas from a long-term strategy perspective saying, you know what? Look, we're not going to win. We're not like one piece away from winning the cup. So there was no point in them getting into the arms race, which is fine. I think they need depth, but I understand, I think, their perspective of not being buyers here.
I feel like we can go on there. We'll just move on.
We could go on there for a long time. I can talk about that. Dallas is exciting to me. I think they're an exciting place. Moving on to Detroit, they lost. They received nobody except picks. They lost Thomas Tatar and Peter Mrazek. They're clearly tanking. Detroit doesn't have any players worth owning already. I think this takes a bigger hit to their goaltending. I don't see this. I don't see Jimmy Howard as an add, even though he's going to get starts. I don't think there's much fantasy relevance here, aside from maybe it makes them worse. But Thomas Tatar was slotting into the third line, I think.
He was all over the place, but
Yeah, mostly third line, I think. So really, it doesn't add much fantasy relevance here.
I think the only thing that would affect that as far as highly owned players go is Dylan Larkin. He was playing alongside Dylan Larkin for stretches of time. Larkin really doesn't have any good wingers anymore with Tatar gone. And Tatar wasn't... I'm sort of bearish on Tatar in general, but whatever. and then Mrazek... technically bumps up Jimmy Howard's numbers because he's going to get all the starts for the most part, unless they really decide to play some prospect. I don't even know who they called up, but
I have no clue.
Yeah. But so I guess if you're in a really deep league and you really need a goalie, Jimmy Howard could be worth a look, but just bear in mind that he's going to lose all the games.
pretty much. He's not going to be very good. Maybe for some stretches, but whatever. Moving on to Edmonton, they lose. They receive nobody, and they lose Patrick Maroon. They get faster on average.
Yep, it might actually be better.
it might actually be better because they can't put Maroon on McDavid's line anymore. But let's be real, he's going to put Lucic up there.
Yeah, they probably will. Jesus.
And that's the only thing I have to mention on Edmonton is that Maroon was a coach favorite to put on that top line. And now you just got to keep an eye out for who's going to be up there with Draisaitl and McDavid. It's the only thing.
Unless they split them up, which they've been doing sometimes.
Yeah, unless they split them up, then it doesn't matter. But there's a high likelihood that, let's say, Lucic or somebody like that goes up there. And then, yeah, they become relevant. But aside from that, there's not that much. There's not that much relevance there. So how about you take us into Florida?
Yep, not much here. Nope. Acquired Frank Vetrano. That's all. Okay. He's a bottom six and or scratch. Moving on. The Kings. They acquired Tobias Reeder, Scott Wedgwood, Dion Phaneuf, and Nate Thompson. So three of those guys are depth guys. Scott Wedgwood is, I guess, their backup now?
No, he got sent down immediately. They brought up Jack Campbell.
Okay, yeah. So no. so then they've got Tobias Reeder, who's going to be bottom six, Nate Thompson, bottom six, and then Dion Phaneuf, who's a gigantic contract that they're going to put into an enforcer slash, you know, big D type role. They also lost Darcy Kemper, Marian Gaborik, and Nick Shore. Gaborik had that like weird resurgence for a little bit, but he's very past his prime. Yeah. Nick Shore, as we already mentioned, doesn't matter. Darcy Kemper was a backup goalie, so that doesn't matter either. I don't think any of the players other than Dion Phaneuf has real fantasy relevance. And I am lower on Dion Phaneuf than you are, at the very least. I think there's very obviously two better offensive defensemen, and arguably three if you put Martinez in there on that team. So Phaneuf is going to get second power play time because they like to stack up defensemen on the power play. But their second power play is not fantastic. Although, if they're playing Carter's second power play, which I don't think they are, that would help.
Yeah, I mean, I do want to mention that the last two games he's done nothing. He had one shot on goal in both games and went minus one and minus two. So my sustainably high isn't looking too hot right now. But nonetheless, I think that, on one hand, I think the Kings improve tremendously. I think the add of Tobias Reeder is fantastic, fits the bill perfectly. I think Dion Phaneuf is a great match as well. I think he could get some fantasy relevance only because one of the things that made him relevant in Ottawa was his peripherals were so good that the occasional point was just kind of an ad. And
yep,
that's kind of where you see value in him, and he might be the same thing. Nate Thompson is a complete wash. And like you said, Marian Gaborik is whatever. So kind of interesting. It might be worth actually keeping an eye on Jack Campbell, who has shown promise down in the AHL. And Darcy Kemper, with how well he played, became a really popular goalie ad as a backup. So Jack Campbell is one of those sneaky guys that, you know, if they start to rest quick down the stretch and go 50-50, they have three back-to-backs coming up. So there definitely is going to be starts for Jack Campbell. Yep. The only thing is he's a big question mark. We really don't know whether he's ready or not.
All right, moving into Minnesota. I'm just going to streak right through the next couple. Minnesota lost Mike Riley. He's a third-pairing defenseman, sixth or seventh, doesn't matter. Montreal received Mike Riley and lost Joe Moreau. Moreau?
Moreau?
That doesn't matter.
Joe Moreau.
Joe Moreau. No fantasy impact on either of those teams. So moving into a fun one, Nashville. They received Ryan Hartman. They said the price was high. Everybody's saying the price was high on Hartman, and that's because it cost him a first and change, I think. I don't remember. I think they paid a prospect as well.
Yeah, I think there was a prospect in there.
Yeah, so Hartman, I was very surprised to see him go for a first. I mean, I was kind of surprised to see him go at all, but I didn't expect him to garner a first when even Kane didn't. They clearly like him a lot. Nashville must see something in him that fits their system or a play style they can take advantage of. With that in mind, it makes me think they're going to put him in a top six role. Why would you pay a first for a guy that's going to be, you know, getting 15 minutes a game or less on, you know, your third line? It doesn't make sense to me. So that makes me think they're going to put him either with Turris or Johansson. He's a right winger, so that's going to mean either Arvidsson moves down or Craig Smith moves down. I'm assuming it'll be Smith. So that would put him on a line with Turris and Fiala. Unless he plays left wing, who knows? You know, whatever. But so I think Hartman could be very sneaky. He's very low owned. Keep an eye on him. I'm certainly going to. He could find some real, especially if he gets top power play time, then yeah. He can really be an interesting play.
Yeah, one thing that gets me excited about Hartman is just how Nashville treats their young guns. You know, mm-hmm. We saw what Aaberg did last year. He was playing some good minutes. Fiala's clearly playing good minutes. I think Craig Smith is like 26, so he's not really like a young gun. But no. Definitely like this idea of letting people kind of take on bigger roles clearly seems to be a thing with Pierre Laviolette in Nashville. And so I'm excited to see what Hartman does, because they actually paid a first, a fourth, and Victor Edgedale or something like that is the prospect, and the Blackhawks gave Hartman a sixth. So they paid a pretty penny, and I know that Roto-World says immediately he's going to go bottom six, but I just don't see it. Yeah, I think he could go into that second line.
I mean, technically, but why pay a first and a fourth or whatever it was for a bottom six guy?
That doesn't really make much sense to me. I think he is a gritty guy. He's a big guy. He's not really a goal scorer, but he fits Nashville's style, and he could go on the second. Like we saw, for example, Hartnell do well in like the second line at the beginning of the season because he fits their style. So I think we mm-hmm. could see something with Hartman. Like you said, he could be a very, very sneaky play coming up in these next few weeks if you're in the playoffs. Just one of those guys who could get hot on perhaps the hottest team in the league aside from Vegas. Someone definitely to keep an eye on. Okay, moving on to the Devils. They completed the first ever trade between the Rangers and the Devils. I think a lot of these weird trades like Toronto and the Sens and whatnot have to do with the new format. Like if you're not, who cares about rivalries, honestly, in this new format? Rivalries don't matter. It's all about like where are you going to end up? You're competing yep. against everybody. That's the truth. Like you're against your division and yourself. And it's fine if you trade in the division if you know you're not going to make it pretty much. It's weird, but I think that it adds a lot of that. Anyways, the Devils gain Patrick Maroon and Michael Grabner. I love both acquisitions. I know you kind of disagree with me on Maroon. Mm-hmm. And Maroon is slow as hell, but he can score. That's the biggest thing. That's why He can score. He can definitely score. Yep. That's why he was on McDavid's line. He was slow, but he made up for that with his shot. So I think that's a great ad for them on, let's say, like the third or fourth line or something like that. That's mm-hmm. where he's fine. And even if he had to be moved to the first line, this is where I like this for the Devils is, let's say that you need somebody on the first line because it's getting kind of stale. Maroon can fill that role next to Taylor Hall. So it's an interesting ad. But I do think, though, that his value is pretty much gone for fantasy perspective. Yeah. He's useless. And then for Grabner, he could be interesting, although it depends on deployment. But right now he's on the third line and no power play, so he'd be completely droppable for me at the moment. And I don't yep. think he's going to get the same opportunities that he was getting for the Rangers. He's just lower down in the pecking order.
I think if for some reason you're targeting a guy for shorthanded points, Grabner's always been that kind of guy. He's going to get third line probably and PK time, and that's about it. I don't see him getting any power play time, no extended minutes. Maroon, I thought he was destined for bottom six, but the more I'm thinking about it, there is room on the second line. I don't really know. I don't know what they expect out of him. They didn't pay much, so I don't think they have a whole lot of faith in him being like a stud for them or anything.
No.
So my thought, they paid a third, by the way. My thought is that they're gonna put him bottom six. In fact, he might be a line mate with Grabner. You know, you're utilizing a big body with a speedster and hoping you can. I don't know how that synergizes. Maybe it doesn't work. let's just move
Who
on.
Knows?
I'm done talking about Patrick Maroon. Between him and Dadonov,
we talk about him so much.
It's like, yeah. So next up, the New York Islanders. They received Chris Wagner and Brandon Davidson, and they lost Jason Chimera. None of this is relevant for fantasy. I think Wagner and Davidson, despite being depth move, make Isles a little bit better, but not enough. Like it's not even going to affect their playoff chances.
Nope.
I like the Wagner acquisition because I think he's a better Chimera with more upside. He can be a fourth line guy for the Islanders for a while.
Yeah.
Brandon Davidson's fine, but he's solving a problem that. He's not solving a problem well, and he's solving a problem that should have been solved months ago.
Yes.
So it's too little, too late, very literally.
Yep. And it just shows as far as fantasy relevance,
none of this. Yeah.
That's it. Wave a guy, and then Edmonton gets a third for him. Oh, my God. Oh, Bergevin, you're terrible. But, yeah, I agree with you. Not fantasy relevant, and I'm not convinced this actually makes the Isles any better, even. Like, I think Chimera just fit the system so well. I think Wagner can fit that so well, but, I mean,
Wagner. Like said, he's got more grit to his game than Chimera does.
Yeah.
Chimera had some, but Wagner is like, Wagner punches people. We kind of need more people to punch people, honestly.
You like people who punch
people. We need it. Isles are way too, like, small.
If you could have your ideal team, you'd have a bunch of Chris Wagners surrounded by Corey Perry, Evander Kane, and Ryan Reeves.
Yeah, I'd like that.
That'd be your team. That'd be your dream team. oh, boy. Okay, let's move on to the next one. This is a big one. Perhaps the biggest of the show. The New York Rangers, my team. Maybe making a podcast was a mistake. That's when everything started going downhill. Okay, so we received Vladislav Namestnikov, Ryan Spooner, Matt Beleski. We gave up. Hold on, I'm processing this for a second to make sure it's right. We lost Ryan McDonough, JT Miller, Rick Nash, Michael Grabner, and Nick Holden. Cool. And we got a ton of picks, just a boatload of picks. I'll start with the analysis, I guess. So as far as gaining, Spooner is a great player, and I think he's going to be fantastic on the Rangers. I think he suits our style. I've said this already a million times on this podcast with him on the Bruins. I think he's incredible. He looked great in person. I'm good with him. I think, though, that he can remain on the wire until he gets hot, if he gets hot. He had two assists in his debut, but we'll see what he does. I'm going to agree with you on something that you're going to say, and I won't go into too much detail, but I think Shea is almost a must-add at this point.
He's big almost, fantasy relevance like, now.
Everything will be going through him now. There's no other defenseman really to pass anything through. And also, I think on that note, look to other guys to step up since there's a lot of shoes to fill. Nash is gone, which means that Zuccarello is going to be doing pretty much everything. They're going to need center depth. That's going to be Zibanejad now. He's going to get a big chunk of the minutes. Kreider is also someone who just came back from injury that no one's really paying attention to that could fill shoes. Like, there's a lot of this, but then again, remember, too, that Nash was playing third line. So, yes, there's like holes to fill, but those holes have kind of been filled for a while. So there's not a lot of stuff to discover. Namestnikov could be interesting, but it all depends on how AV, who hates young people, plays this young person, probably fourth line, like with Buchnevich. Namestnikov could be very interesting, but I'm not holding my breath just because of the deployment that we know AV likes to give. There's a good chance Namestnikov could be on the top power play, top line, but there's also a good chance that he ends up third line, second power play. So who knows?
Yeah, I think Namestnikov is probably just about worthless. I think all of his fantasy relevance came when he's playing with Stamkos and Kucherov, and there's hardly any better line mates in the entire league. Spooner made an immediate impact, like right when he started, two assists in his first game. I think it's going to slow down, though. I don't really recommend hanging on to him. The Rangers are in trouble for the season. Like, they don't want to win. So.
Oh, yeah.
Beleski, mentioned briefly already, kind of streaky guy, gets hits, but 90% of the time he's a total ghost if he even plays. Already talked about Shea, so I'll just skip that bit. I think losing Nash is probably going to affect Zuccarello the most because it looks like they want to play Kreider with Zibanejad and Buchnevich on the top line, top power play. So the second line is kind of busted right now, I think. And Zook sits on that, but he sits on top power play. He's a free agent in our league. I'm not that high on him rest of the season.
Yep.
His value has gone down just progressively as the year has gone on.
Yep.
And then losing Grabner, no real effect for fantasy.
Yeah. It should be noted that right now they have Namestnikov on the third line with David Desjardins and Jesper Fast. You think that's a downgrade from Steven Stamkos and Nikita Kucherov? He's on second power play, and then they're playing Ryan Spooner on the fourth line. So, I don't know. I don't know, man. I don't know what we're doing
here. That's weird.
I think this is all a sign that they're planning on moving Namestnikov and Spooner at the draft on draft day. I don't think we're keeping them. But I think for now, just keep an eye on them. They're both droppable. And it's more of just, let's see what they do. Okay, so moving on to another one that was big. Ottawa, they received Marian Gaborik. Surprisingly, they did not lose Erik Karlsson, although they did lose his trust through all this, so he's gone.
Yeah.
They also lost Dion Phaneuf and Nate Thompson. I didn't even write anything down because literally nothing on the Sens right now matters. I regret drafting Erik Karlsson with the third overall pick.
Phaneuf hasn't been doing anything for a while for them. Nate Thompson doesn't matter. And gaining Marian Gabrick, I don't think it matters that much. Losing Phaneuf slightly increases Chabot's value, I guess, but he would have needed Karlsson to get moved, and that would have made it very interesting. But didn't happen, so let's move on to Philadelphia. They receive Peter Mrazek, probably an upgrade in net over Brian Elliott. I honestly don't really know. It might be a bit of a wash, but I think he's going to get more of the starts, and that on a team that's been good lately makes him worth owning in most leagues anyway. As was shown immediately, as he got picked up by like 40% or something on the first day of his trade announcement.
Yep, I like Peter Mrazek a ton. He's a fantastic goalie who had kind of confidence issues, and really, like, if you think about it, I can understand why. Like, this team shat on you forever, didn't want to give you a contract, took you to arbitration, said a bunch of nasty things in arbitration. I mean, he also had some issues there. Like, I'm not going to pin it all on the Red Wings, but I also see how his confidence was kind of shot. But he's a good goalie. He's had a lot of seasons above a .920 save percentage. He's showed that he's very, very good. Well, I'm going to take off one of those varies and just say very good. But Philly is a very, very good team. Mrazek is, in my opinion, a must-grab if you need an upgrade. For example, I'd drop Allen for Mrazek. I wouldn't even hesitate to do that. If Mrazek were available right now, I would drop Allen to pick up Mrazek. Or if you need a third goalie, great pickup. Now, a fun fact. If you go to Daily Faceoff, I'm going to go back to the Senators just for a second. If you go to Daily Faceoff and you look up the lines for the Ottawa Senators, you know they traded so many people away. They actually don't have a fourth line center right now. This is how I've heard rumors. This is from a trusted source. I've heard Eugene Melnyk is actually going to slot into the fourth line center position to save money and not pay himself anything. So there you go. That fourth line gets significantly worse, and Borgetzi's probably going to beat him up while he's out there. Mm-hmm. His own teammate. That's awesome. Anyways, moving on to this is when you know an episode is getting a little too long, is when I start saying things that Brandon's like, oh God, he's doing that again. moving on to Pittsburgh. They receive Josh Juris and Derek Brassard, and they lose Greg McKegg, Ian Cole, and Ryan Reeves. So what do you think about that? I mean, Derek Brassard is huge.
So Brassard's going to be centering Kessel and Gensel, which is a pretty clear upgrade, I think, over Mark Stone and whoever was on his left wing. It was either Dzingel or Bobby Ryan. Bobby Ryan was always hurt.
It shifted.
Yeah.
It's usually Dzingel, I think.
Or Zach Smith, one of the guys.
Zach Smith was the one. Yeah, it was Zach Smith.
The problem is he may not get top power. In fact, he almost certainly won't get top power play time, which he did have in Ottawa, although he didn't really utilize it all that much, as he didn't really get many power play points. I don't know, honestly, if he increases value. I think he gets less minutes, but he's on a better line. Even the second power play is probably better than the power play he was on in Ottawa, so maybe it's better. I mean, I have him right now. I'm going to hold on to him for a few games, but I'm not holding my breath or anything. I don't think he's like a bomb now or anything. It seems like Roto-World seems to love the move. I don't think his fantasy relevance will skyrocket or anything. It might get better, but I don't really know. He's been good for the last month anyway.
Yep. Brassard scares me, to be honest. His line mates are currently very, very good, at least what we think he's going to slot into. But the problem is that they could bring Kessel up and move Hagelin down or move Hornqvist down, which I could very, very much see happening. I would say that there's a 50-50% chance of Kessel being brought up to play with Malkin. That's how I see it. And that scares me. And he's not even going to get power play. In my opinion, I really do think that Brassard is droppable until further notice, just because he's going to be significantly down the pecking order. And really, he doesn't have that high of a ceiling when you think about it. He's competing against Malkin and Crosby for center time. He's never going to get extra time. The other thing to remember is that in Ottawa, he was the guy that they went to, for the most part, anytime there was a high-pressure situation, or it was final minutes, or whatever, right? Like, that kind of situation is what he was in. Now, that's not going to happen. They're going to go to other people. He's not going to be the one that you call when you're down, I don't know, by one goal with 2 minutes left. He's not going to be out there. They're not going to put Broussard out there over other guys. So,
yeah,
in my opinion, he's droppable. I know you're holding on to him, but you can't.
I'm going to watch him for the first couple games, yeah.
To be fair, you can afford to hold on to him because you're in first. Like, that's the only reason. If you're in first and you want to take a flyer on him, it may be like you have a really, really good guy in the playoffs, fine. But if you're struggling to make the playoffs right now or you've got a matchup that's in the quarterfinals or something, I would personally not take the risk and I'd rather have somebody else at this point just because you don't know. And even 5-on-5, Kessel has not been that great. He's been very quiet. He's been – all his magic has kind of come on the power play recently. So just something to note.
Yep.
And Josh Shores, like you said, literally does not matter.
Yep.
Okay, moving on to San Jose Sharks.
Well, I'll talk about them for
this is one of your favorite players. Go for it.
Well, I'm talking about Pittsburgh just for a second. I kind of got over everything. I think Broussard is the only thing that matters there. Losing Greg McKegg, Ian Cole, and Ryan Reeves don't really matter.
Yep.
Acquiring Josh Joris doesn't really matter. I'm higher on Derek Broussard than you are, but not as high as Roto-World.
Yeah.
Moving on, San Jose. They acquire Evander Kane and Eric Fair. Probably got the best deal of any team as far as acquisitions go, with Evander Kane being pretty cheap if he doesn't re-sign. Even if he does re-sign, they're not going to sign him unless he plays well. So they really have the option there. His value should go up significantly. There's almost no doubt about it. He's almost certainly going to be playing with Pavelski and top power play. I don't know if that means Donskoy is going to consider to be on the right wing there, but it's an upgrade for Evander Kane regardless.
Oh, yeah.
And then Eric Fair, there's nothing to talk about there. It doesn't matter.
Yep. Yep. And I think something to note on Evander Kane is just to remember that he is playing for a contract here. He is not re-signed. So this is still technically a contract year for him. And if he's going to be on a better line, more minutes, if I owned him, which I used to, I'd be absolutely thrilled right now. I would be absolutely thrilled. I don't think I could have dreamed of a better situation if I'm a Kane owner of where he could have gone. So that's a very, very good sign if you're an Evander Kane owner, and I think the Sharks are going to get significantly better from this. So let's move on to one of, I think, I would argue this is kind of, you might disagree with me here, but I think they're one of your favorite teams in the West.
I like St. Louis, yeah.
Yeah. It's because you like Pareko.
Yeah, I do for some reason, but probably because he broke the glass on like one of his first shots in the NHL, but... I don't like the moves they made, really. Well, I like Soshnikov, I do. And I think that worked out for both teams. But I don't think it's really matters that much. He's going to play bottom 6 minutes to start. He could potentially get himself into a top six role at some point, but I don't think this is the year for it. He's a weird guy. He could be a guy that like bombs out immediately or has very high upside, so we'll see. But they gave away Paul Stastny, which to me says they're giving up on the season because they didn't get a player back.
Yep.
I think... losing Paul Stastny means anybody that's not on the top line is no longer fantasy relevant. They don't have a second center really anymore. So that means I assume they're going to put Schwartz, Shen, and Tarasenko on the top line because that was working for a long time, which means Steen, Sobotka, but who cares, are screwed. Steen is probably going to stay on the top power play, but, I mean, it just doesn't matter enough. Nope. He also hasn't been very good and is way too owned as it is. I think he's at like 40%, which... For how he's been this season makes no sense to me.
Yep. I agree. And for me, I think it's like we see where the Blues are at now. They were sellers at the deadline, and that honestly, I think to a lot of people was surprising. To me, right now, their attitude is, hey, look, we may or may not make the playoffs, but we don't care at this point. We weren't going to win the cup anyways. Let's just see where we get. You know, like let's see what this roster is made of, and let's get... I don't think they were actively shopping Stastny either. I think someone probably called and said, hey, what about Stastny?
Yeah, probably.
That's how I feel it happened because you needed to waive it. They're 30th in goals for since December, so it's not like St. Louis has been good. I know everyone's saying, oh, but they're 1 point out of the playoffs. So what? Who cares? They've been carried by their backup goaltender for half the season. And other than that, they've had trouble scoring goals. Arizona is last in that stat, and they only have four less, and they have four games in hand. Like, St. Louis has been trash, literally. They're 17-18 since December. Soshnikov is way too early right now, but I'm very excited for him because He is a really good player. He showed a lot of promise before getting injured in Toronto, and I think he's going to fit in really, really well on the Blues. So I think that's a very, very good pickup for him. Now, perhaps one of the most exciting ones, aside from the Rangers, is the Lightning here. They receive Ryan McDonagh and JT Miller, and they lose Vladdy Namestnikov. Now, Ryan McDonagh is going to get some interesting new deployment because he's probably not going to get power play time. All right, well,
I think he will. Maybe just on the top power play.
Maybe second power
play. I think he's going to pair up or take over the second power play from Sergachev. We'll see.
Yeah. So that's kind of what I see. I think this is a huge improvement for McDonagh. I mean, Hedman is usually out there with Stamkos and Kucherov 5-on-5, and that's where McDonagh will probably be. I would be shocked if he's not on the top pairing. Although,
yeah,
I don't know. It's weird because isn't Hedman also a lefty?
I don't know.
Or a left defenseman?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, because McDonagh isn't a righty. I don't know why for a second I thought he was ready. Anyways, so downside of power being second power play, I think he's super, super enticing. If your league doesn't count power play, he's perhaps one of those must-add kind of guys just because of what the Lightning can do 5-on-5. And then going on to JT Miller, I think he's pretty much a fringe guy. Namestnikov was on the third line, so I'm guessing he'll probably suit up somewhere around there.
Yeah, most likely going to be third line.
Maybe sometimes get moved up to the second line, but we'll see. I mean, the
Tampa Bay. I'd be surprised if he gets moved up unless there's an injury.
The Tampa Bay Rangers are looking really good right now. I must say.
I actually don't know whether McDonagh's going to get better or worse. He had all the opportunities on the Rangers because he was definitely the top line and definitely top power play and the only guy they had to reliably quarterback anything after Shattenkirk went out. So I think he's going to get better plus minus and more even strength points, but I think it's going to cost him power play points. And it's tough for defensemen to get really relevant numbers without being on a strong power play unit.
Yep.
Tampa's second unit is not bad either. It's just a matter of whether or not the first unit makes the goal. You know what I mean? So they're going to get less ice time. So there's just that. JT Miller, no fantasy impact, I don't think. And losing Namestnikov, despite how well he's been playing this season, as we already mentioned, it was mostly because he was playing with Stamkos and Kucherov. I don't think him himself as a talent matters that much as far as fantasy relevance.
Now, who's been playing on the top line just while you're talking about Namestnikov?
Kunitz
has been up there. Okay. Because I would say that was something.
I like Namestnikov better than Kunitz, but.
Yeah. That's fair. That's something I think to keep an eye on is just who gets that top line because.
They throw JT Miller up there. Could be.
Yeah, like that could be very, very interesting. Because, for example, if JT Miller gets moved up to the top line, I'd get very interested.
All right, talking about Toronto for a second, as I just got a push notification that I got a power play assist from Morgan Rielly, so I'm happy about that.
There you go.
They received Thomas Plekanec, and they lost Eric Fehr and Nikita Soshnikov. Plekanec, he's a 20-minute-a-night guy if you need him to be. The guy is like ageless. He's going to get a bottom six role, though, probably fourth line. You might see a little bit of relevance while Matthews is out, which I think is going to be for about 10 days, but I don't think there's going to be much beyond that. Fehr and Soshnikov don't matter. Really, none of these guys should be picked up.
No.
There's like an outside chance that Mechanic is relevant for literally a week, but it's not something to go rushing to the waiver wire for.
Yeah, I mean, Plekanec right now is listed on the fourth line, so. That tells you everything you need to know. Now, as far as minutes go, I was checking. He's definitely. Let's see. Where is he? Yeah, he's played 9 minutes in today's game, so he's definitely fourth line. Like, it's not even a question. So I'd say he's completely droppable and not even really worth picking up. He's a depth guy right now, and I think they'll give him the opportunity to move up as time goes on. But I think he's pretty much slotted into that that fourth line. Okay, moving on to Vancouver before you take us into the last few. Oh, we got like four more. Okay, moving into Vancouver. UC Jokinen is received and they lose Thomas Vanek. I don't really think this matters much for anybody on Vancouver. We know who they are as a team. I don't think there's much value.
The only fantasy relevant guys there are top line guys, Bo Horvat and Brock Besser, and then Edler probably. Even Horvat and Besser have been pretty slow recently. Okay, but nothing special. Vanek, I guess, slightly devalues the Sedins, but it, again, doesn't really matter much.
Yep.
Okay, moving into Vegas. They paid a lot to get Tomas Tatar, Ryan Reeves, and they lost all their picks. they have a million, so they really didn't. But with Reeves, he's going to keep putting up Pims. He's going to play the same game he's always been playing. So if you have him for Pims, just keep him. Doesn't matter. Yeah. Tatar is interesting. If they paid that much, I have to assume they're going to put him in a top six role. And Vegas is one of the only teams where every player on the top six is worth owning. That's almost unheard of in fantasy. If he winds up in the top six, does that make him rosterable? It might. It really might.
Depends on power play, too.
Yeah, but they have a 1A, 1B power play.
True.
So I can't imagine he's not on the power play. There's plenty of room for him there. They can move one of their not-so-great offensive defensemen off. Their defensemen are, like, pretty mediocre as far as offense goes.
Yep. So, which is funny, because at the time of the expansion draft, that's what everyone thought, hey, they killed it on defense. But their offense is okay.
They did defensively. Their defense is good defensively. They're not fantastic offensively.
That's a good point.
Tatar, very interesting possibly. Keep an eye on him.
Yeah, I like both of the pickups. I think Ryan Reeves is a fantastic pickup because mm-hmm. the Western Conference is so hard-hitting, and if you think about your road to the Cup, you're going to have to face probably a Pacific team in like Anaheim, Calgary, or the Kings, maybe the Sharks. So that leads me to believe, well, actually, no, because the Central – because the Pacific seems to have all their points – let's see, I kind of wanted to check this out because I think this is important to note is, maybe not because we're talking fantasy here, but just an interesting thing of looking at like what the potential road to the Cup is going to be here. They're going to have to go through probably, right now they would play Calgary. So that's not as hard hitting of a team, but if you look at the teams in the hunt there, it's St. Louis, Los Angeles, Colorado. Some of those are hard-hitting teams, and like let's say Anaheim or San Jose falls to that last wild card spot. Those are some big teams, and I think Ryan Reeves adds a lot there that they didn't have before. And there are a lot of divisional matchups coming up, and there's actually some value to Ryan Reeves in a Pims league, hits in Pims league, just because there's a chance that he gets tossed. Quite a bit.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then moving on to Tomas Tatar, I agree with you. I think that, you know, if he gets top six, that's great, but I just don't see it happening because if you look at who's on the top six, they're killing it. I don't see why they'd really mess with that. And right now, David Perron, who's really pretty much a first liner in a way right now, is on the second line. So I don't see them moving Perron out. I don't see them moving Alex. Was it Tuck? Did we learn it was Tuck? I think it was Tuck. I don't think they move Alex Tuck out of the top line. So I think that I see Ryan Carpenter.
I thought Tuck was third line. He was last time I checked anyway. What I would assume is if they're going to move anybody, it's going to be Riley Smith. Sort of a thing where you need to watch. Because, again, the six guys I'm talking about here are William Karlsson, David Perron, James Neal, who's been out for a few games. He's coming back, so that means Tuck is going to move down. Riley Smith, Eric Walla. And Marchessault.
Jonathan.
Yeah, the only guy I see, the winger that I see in that group being able to be moved down would be Riley Smith. And he's been very good lately, so I don't know that they do, but why would you pay a first, second, and third for a guy you're going to run bottom six? It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
So just pay attention because I think, especially if you're Riley Smith holder, just watch it.
Yep. Because Riley Smith may get moved down, or they can move Carpenter down to the fourth line and then put Tatar on the third line. But who knows? I mean, it's all speculation at this point, but he could, I agree with you, be very, very – he's someone to keep a very close eye on. So how about you kick us off on the last two?
Yep. Washington didn't do anything, so we can skip that. Nope. They really didn't need to. They're in good shape.
Yep.
Last team, Winnipeg, receives Joe Morrow and Paul Stastny out of nowhere. Stastny being the trade nobody saw coming. Getting Morrow doesn't matter. Stastny is a big deal. He's almost certainly going to be centering Ehlers and Laine, which means he's probably going to get second power play time, which is fine. But that even strength line is very good, and that's very good for Stastny in general. He's the type of guy you might own if you have face-off stats to begin with. So now you get a good boost as his line has gotten significantly better.
Yep.
Odds are he's going to get less minutes, but that shouldn't matter too much, although he may get less draws as a result. But, I think it's a big boost to his fantasy relevance.
Yeah, I agree. I think Stastny is super, super interesting to me. Although it does, I think one thing to note for Winnipeg is it kills all of Brian Little's fantasy value.
He hasn't had much for a while, though. So yeah, there's that.
I mean, he hasn't been up on that. You're right. He hasn't been up on that second line for a while, but...
Oh, he has been. The third line, apparently, is Ehlers and Line A for some reason.
Interesting.
I assume Little might get bumped off the second power play for Stastny. So,
yeah. So that pretty much kills Brian Little's value. I think Stastny is a huge improvement. And honestly, I got to give props to Chevy and the team at Winnipeg, because I would argue that this was perhaps one of the best ads of the day, and no one saw it coming. No one knew he was available or anything, and they didn't pay that much for him, if I remember correctly. I think that it was
I want to say they paid a first and something.
Which is fine, honestly. Like, they have a team that I think could make it all the way.
Hang on, let me see what they...
While you're doing
2018
that,
first and Eric Foley. So that's pretty cheap.
That's fine. That's totally compared to everything else. Like, look at what Tatar went for.
Yeah. I would much rather have Stastny over Tatar.
Much rather. That's a fantastic ad. I mean, and he's played so well with Tarasenko. Now you're giving him Line A and Ehlers. That's great.
Vegas should have moved for Stastny if he's available. That's an upgrade over Holla. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The fantastic ad. But other than that, I think Stastny is super interesting, and I'd keep an eye on him. Like, if he starts getting hot, he was addable at some point, or as I'd say, grabbable at some point during the season on St. Louis.
Yeah, I had him on and off. Line.
Yeah, me too. I picked him up at some point just because he was good. And that was when they were shuffling lines. Now he's going to be fixed on that second line, most likely in Winnipeg, so he could get hot
third,
really, really
quick.
They
call quick. It a third.
Or third, whatever it is. But I think he'll get some good opportunities and have better, or not better line mates, but... well, actually, he will now because he was on the third line in St. Louis.
Yeah, he was all over the place. He was all playing first with Barbashev and Tarasenko for the last bit.
Yeah, St. Louis has no idea what they're doing. Okay, but other than that, there you go. That's a long wrap-up of every single team and what they did this trade deadline.
And their fantasy relevance.
So there you go. We'll be back, I think, for Wednesday's Unsustainable episode. It might be the final week because... Because the playoffs are starting soon, and for the playoffs we kind of cut it down a little bit because, let's be real, only some of you make the playoffs, so we got to make it relevant for the playoffs. So we'll change something up. Anyways, thank you for listening. Other than that, the Rangers suck, and we'll see you on Wednesday.
Yeah, thanks for listening.